But actually, every day you walk onto the set, it's incredibly stimulating and exciting. Every time you see what the new set is, every time you see a new script, every time you discover who the new guest star is going to be, every time you get to be Doctor Who, which is what happens to me. I go to work and I've got to try and be Doctor Who. That remains for me immensely exciting.
These are the Target Files, Doctor Who, Season 10 Reviews. Join us now as we discuss the final season of Peter Capaldi as the Doctor and Stephen Moffat as showrunner.
Target Files, discussing Season 10, Doctor Who, Thin Ice by Sarah Dollard. So Mike, what did you think of the episode? This is Alex in Exeter.
Hello, Mike in Swansea here. How are you folks? Yeah, I made some initial notes. A very well layered, great story. I think it could easily have fit into the classic era of Doctor Who. Always a favourite of mine, the historicals. A favourite of many fans, I think. Yeah, thoroughly enjoyed overall, Al. Lots of things to discuss. Let's fire away, shall we?
Seriously enjoyed it. So, what do you think needs discussing first?
I'm looking overall at the influences. We have just mentioned historicals. Definite Oliver Twist influence in terms of the sort of ragtag bunch of kids within the story.
Classic book references all the way through it, I think. Now, Oliver Twist, Tory in London. And I think it worked because it looked stunning, that whole sort of frost fair and the jugglers and the sort of all background, and then great undertone of race and colour and all these sort of things were done so well, I thought.
Similar before, going back over 40 years now, would you say similar to the talents of Wang Chiang?
Oh yeah, most definitely, when you've got Tory and sort of ethos going through that and then something nasty under the, you know, the surface, definitely.
Yeah, and once again, within this week, there was quite a late reveal, wasn't there? There was a late reveal last week of the child and Ralph Little as the guest character. And this week, we had a pretty late reveal. I think I counted it was around about 30 minutes in of the main villain.
Yeah, well, I think that worked quite well because it took you down different alleys. You thought, you know, it was just the, you know, beast under the water being the main villain. Then you saw it wasn't really. It was more to do with the products and the byproducts of the beast, really, and the sort of way humans treat people, really.
Yes, Prophet, we've seen something of before in, many times in Doctor Who, haven't we? In the era, like the Max Capricorn character in the Voyage of the Damned Christmas special. Going back as far as the Sunmakers, I think, in the Tom Baker era, that's all to do with money, isn't it?
Oh, almost definitely. I think it's definitely a product of, you know, Doctor Who likes to bring up quite a bit, you know, how, you know, capitalism affects everything, really, and you know, the whole fact that he's more interested in what he can make out of the monster than actually looking after the monster in this whole episode, I think.
Yes, and a very more recent influence was, of course, The Beast Below. Did you have reminders of that episode, Al?
I did, actually. I thought, you know, the way it ended, I'm not going to say because it's a big spoiler, but the way it ended, I thought was very sort of similar to the way that ended, that episode ended, with the, you know, the whole whale being saved and that saving thing. I thought it was a very connected episode, really.
Yes, there has been some questions on social media about why the creature at the end didn't destroy all the bridges in London, being as it would have weighed a certain amount. I imagine it would have been able to do that, Godzilla style.
Yeah, that would have been fun, but I think the reason it didn't do that because it ate the person who was sort of, you know, torturing it. So I think that sort of gave it a bit more spectre, really.
Yeah, setting-wise, a great setting of the Frost Fair in London. That has been influenced in, That has been referenced in Doctor Who before. Riversong says that one incarnation of the Doctor took her there and they saw Stevie Wonder perform, but he never realised he did. That was a joke.
That was a good joke. I thought they might reference a more in this episode, but I think the Frost Fairy, because that's, you know, big historical thing that actually happened, is a really good place to put a Doctor Who monster.
Yes, apparently 1814 was the last year it actually happened and they were able to hold those markets on there.
Oh, most definitely, you know, apparently you could skate and walk on it. And I think there's one beautiful, quite scary scene in this, with those people skating on the Thames look fantastic in this.
Yes, I was going to talk about the technical aspects of the episode again. Very bright palette being used by the videographers, the cinematographers this season. Do you find that quite, I don't know, quite glaring, Al? I know you watch this on a 4K TV.
I think that is the reason it is that bright. I think we're not being told it's in 4K, but I think it has been recorded in 4K. And the problem with 4K, I know a lot of people don't like it, but I love it because of my sight issues, is it does make things a lot brighter on the palette, apparently.
Aha, so you certainly have noticed that. Yeah, it's just about the right balance for me. It can be a little bit too glaring, but I think it suits...
I think that's why, Mike, because they've shot it in 4K, but there seems to be this thing with the BBC where they won't say they've actually shot stuff in 4K, like they did with Planet Earth. They shot that all in 4K. What, you had to wait till they brought the Blu-ray out before you knew it was actually in 4K.
Ah, is there a commercial reason for this, Al? Could you explain, do you think, why they're doing that?
I think it's because it costs an awful lot to do, and the BBC are a little bit wary about putting everything in 4K quite yet. I know Sky have done it with a lot of their content now, but I think it is slowly going to happen where everything will be in 4K, hopefully.
Yes, you have to get the balance right, don't you, between it being a publicly funded broadcaster and keeping up with the competition, the commercial stations?
Oh, most definitely. So anyway, go back to the episode. Did you think that the whole Bill Black issue was done really well? I thought it was.
Yes, racism, Al, a huge theme in this. I'd say a great reaction to it, first of all, by Peter Capaldi's Doctor. A great build-up in terms of telling Bill that, you know, she had to be diplomatic to whoever this Lord Sutcliffe was. And then he comes out with something, you know, horrific, bigoted and racist and ignorant, and the Doctor turns around and punches him.
I thought that scene was brilliant. That's the whole build-up to Bill and being so, oh, you've got to be diplomatic, don't be angry. And then as soon as he pisses him off, he punches him, it's great.
Absolutely, and very controversial. Well, depends on your belief system, really, Al, doesn't it? A controversial line at the beginning, Bill pointing out that this Victorian year, 1814, she's visited, she actually says herself the population are a lot more sort of blended and a lot more black people around, she says, and... Capaldi comes back and says, well, you know, so was Jesus.
I thought that line is you know, you probably take it and not notice it, but I thought there's a lot of people that line is just going to really get under their skins. I thought it was very cleverly put. It was sort of quite a throwaway line, and you know, if you didn't notice, he wouldn't have annoyed you. And I thought it was very good personally, because the Victorian life would have been that, because of slavery and that, it would have been a very mixed society, I think.
Absolutely, you know, and there would have been more or less the centre of the world, London, in the industrial era, and then moving on to Victorian times, there would have been a lot of immigration then. Possibly a lot more integration than we see now, you know, divisive politics nowadays.
Yeah, I think so, because, you know, it's sort of, he's always pointed out there was a mixed culture in London. You know it's going to be a mixture, and I think it works really well in this episode, because it's there from the start. The cultural thing was there, and I really liked it.
You mentioned that was a very witty piece of dialogue from Dallard. What did you make of Sarah's writing style in this, Al?
I think it's really clever. It's fast-paced, and you know, it's lots of beautiful little bits. Like, there's some great scenes. That bit where Bill sees her first death, and he's really conflicted by it. If anybody had any doubts about Pearl McAtee's acting, that sort of would completely made you convinced that she's brilliant, basically.
Yes, I mean, it's Sarah's writing in this episode, but... it's almost like Moffat has stripped back certain aspects of the Companion this series, hasn't he? You know, we've had the more or less... perhaps we don't see them as much in the older Companions as they might happen off-screen in the adventures. She is very full of questions, Pearl Mackey, isn't she? Pearl Mackey's Bill, she, you know, she asks questions we may all ask, like, why don't you put the seats closer to the console in the TARDIS? It's a very stripped-back effort by Moffat and by Sarah Dallard, isn't it, to show the horror of seeing that first death.
Oh yeah, I think it's really well done, personally, in that sort of scene. He's obviously not seen any death before, trying to convince her that it's normal, basically, he's not having it, and I thought it was really well done between the two of them. And I think the way that they're making her make the big decisions is going to make the companion more interesting, I think.
What did you make of the other characters? The gang of children, a bit of an end for one of them, of course, a bit of a scary suck down into the ice. What did you make of that scene?
I thought that was really well done, that scene, because he thinks he's going to get away with it. He's stolen the sonic screwdriver, and in a minute he's sucked into the ice, and it's sort of, wow, you're not expecting it, really. And I think they're really well... It's called young children actors can be a bit annoying sometimes, but I think they were really well acted, and there was sort of good connections between the script and then, I thought.
I generally think in all of New Who that children have been written and performed very well. Young actors have performed very well. Off the top of my head, you can't seem to remember too many child actors in classic Who, Al, can you?
Not really. I was thinking about it. I don't think there is really many.
There's possibly Romulus and Remus in Collins' first story, The Twin Dilemma.
Oh, yeah, maybe there. Yeah, that's true. Maybe there. But there's many in the classic. I think it was sort of started with Russell T. Davis, and you had great stuff in that first series. And
yeah, the empty Child and Dr. Dances is... has some orphan children later on in London's history, doesn't it, in the Second World War, and very well acted again.
I think it's sort of a thing because it connects to the audience. I think they sort of think if children see them in those particularities, then they might well connect to it, really.
Strange in a way with the classic series, isn't it, that it has always been a family show and there wasn't more sort of child acting involved.
Yeah, I know, it's a very sort of weird concept where it is meant to be a family sort of thing you watch for your family, but back in the day it wasn't really made children, sort of in the new era it's had more, I think.
Of course, the Peter Cushing movie, Susan herself is a very young girl in that, but not canon, folks, are they? He's a human scientist, he's not really the doctor, Get on to us about that, whether that's controversial or not, at DW Target Files Twitter, or search Facebook for the Doctor Who Target Files podcast. We'd love some more feedback, folks.
Oh, indeed. We'd love to know what you think about what we're discussing in these episodes. We've mentioned, we've got a bit of Nardo at the end, haven't we?
Yes, we'll get on to that. How do you feel about Peter Capaldi this week, Al? He's really very, very comfortable in the role now. Do you think he's slightly freed up by the shackles of Clara, or...?
Oh, most definitely. I think his performances in these first three episodes have been absolutely, he's getting better and better. And there's just those, two speeches in this week's episode were absolutely, wow, this is brilliant. And I agree, I think the problem was that Clara was sort of at her end of her sort of character development, I think, by the time you had Peter come into it. I think there are some good Clara episodes, but I think, she knew she was going, so she wasn't, I don't know if it's like when people know they're going, they don't try as hard, or sometimes. So I know Peter Capaldi's acting is absolutely brilliant. What do you think?
Yeah, a great compassionate side to his Doctor show, and there was a point I'd forgotten to mention earlier, Al, I wanted to make. People criticised Clara's representation towards the end as it was almost like the show had become Clara Who instead of Doctor Who.
Yeah, I suppose I would agree with that because I think the problem is getting that balance right. Because Clara was by N on the same sort of maybe on the same sort of level of the Doctor, and it was not that sort of teacher learning element to her, I think.
But I think that naturally comes with development of the companion, Al, the assistant, whatever you want to call them nowadays. I think I did wonder. This thought came to me last night when, towards the episode, the Doctor showed compassion and he ended up calling Bill the boss at the end, didn't he? You're the boss. And I was worried there's been such a positive fan reaction on the whole to Pearl Mackie as Bill. Are we going to see those same old boring arguments come up again now? Oh, this will now turn into Bill Who instead of Doctor Who. And
I don't think that with Bill, because of the way the stories are going to go. I don't think so, because I think, though he's going to be a strong companion, I reckon the way they've laid things out, the Doctor is also going to be still the main centre, so he'll make the choices, but it might be more led by her decisions as well, so I think it will be a good balance.
Yes, I found my taking my hats off to Moffat. I think he made fun of that theory back in Series 8, because we had scene at the start of the Death in Heaven finale when Clara pretends to be the Doctor to the Cybermen, and you actually had Jenna Coleman's eyes appearing into the credits rather than Peter's. So I think Stephen was aware of that argument at the time and wanted to poke a bit of jest at it. You know, fair play to him for doing that.
Oh, well, definitely. It's always good. You know, Stephen Moffat takes all these sort of Twitter and things on board, I think. He does take the... I know people moaning going, you know, he's not interested in the fans. I think he does take all the fans' sort of nibbles and gribbles online, I think.
So I kind of move back to Pearl Mackey again. I thought she basically... Pardon the analogy in this episode. She has taken to television work like a fish to water, or a fish to the Thames, really.
Most definitely, because I know, like you, we all had doubts about her, and then she's just got better and better. And there was just a couple of performances in last night's episode where you just thought, why do I have any doubts? She was just brilliant. There was just bits, and she just knows how to get all the sort of levels of emotion right, which is what, you know, think people were whining. She's only done theatre work, but it seems to have really done well.
Yeah, you know, just the sort of indignant anger and sadness once she'd seen that first death, Al.
Oh, yeah, but most definitely that whole bit where, you know, the Doctor is basically trying to say, you know, death doesn't really bother me. Well, I do get upset by it. I've seen too much. And it's like her first... And just the raw emotions coming out of that character were brilliant.
Yes, ignoring any sort of structure to the podcast, Al, I'm going to go back to a technical aspect. One thing that let this down was some pretty, I'd say, naff CGI again this week.
Oh, which bits?
The initial reveal at the beginning of the eye of the fish beneath the Thames, the giant creature, and I suppose the destruction at the end. A little well too lit, you know. I think... As we mentioned before, this being made ready for 4K broadcast, it can be a little too bright, and that can give it a slight video game feel. But I do realise they're not on the budget of Hollywood pictures with Doctor Who, but that's something we've always loved about it.
Yeah, I would agree. Some of the CGI looked a little bit rushed, I think. You know, I think they could have done more with the elephant, personally. That would be more fun. But I don't know, because I did like the ending bit, but I can see where you're coming from, but the sort of CGI was a little bit rushed in some parts.
And possibly, once again, you know, Murray Gold not using too many new music cues. I don't know if it has been confirmed. Can you check with us, folks, and get on to us at DW Target Files Twitter or Facebook? Search for the Doctor Who podcast files. Is Murray Gold finishing in time for the Chibnall era of Doctor Who? I think they are starting to use a bit of his old recycled scores for the music at the moment, Al.
That was my one... I mentioned to you last night, but I thought I had a niggle, and that was my one niggle again. The fact, every time they use the same bit of music, and it's beginning to get a really bit annoying, to be honest. I think, like you, I'm not 100% sure he's leaving. I think he is. I think he's just thinking, well, why should I bother writing any new music?
Yes, I think you're referring to the 12th Doctor theme, Al, which is also, of course, our theme, being hypocrites, but it's a very good rock version of it.
I like it as our theme, but I just think, you know, if he's going to do a bit of action, they could have come up with something new, if you know what I mean.
Yes, and we did hear cues, I think, of from the Matt Smith era, didn't we, in the first episode, the pilot.
Yeah, I just think, you know, if you've got such a good composer, and he is a good composer, why couldn't he just come up with new music? Unless they went to him, you're fired sort of thing, and he thought, well, why should I do anything for you then?
Oh, I do think he's fantastic, Al. I mean, some of his scores are up there with some of my favourite movie scores, to be honest.
Oh,
you know?
Well, most definitely. I love his music. Some parts are just brilliant, but I don't know of him in this series so far. He's just has been recycling a lot. I do like that bit of new music he did for Bill. That was really good.
Yes, that was very impressive, wasn't it? Very, very impressive.
This is Alex Gibbon's Doctor Who News Round.
Hello there, this is Alex, and this is Hughes News. On April the 30th, first thing to note is the ratings from last night's episode of Doctor Who, Thin Ice. Unfortunately, they were quite low at 3.76 million, which is extremely low, in my opinion, for this brilliant episode. It had a 20.4 share of all the overall ratings of TV last night, which, again, is quite low, making it the fifth watched thing last night on BBC TV. new forthcoming Target novel audiobooks. In November, The Five Doctors is being released on audiobook. Rumours are that it might be John Coleshill reading it, but nothing confirmed yet. Following month in December is also coming The Tenth Planet, read hopefully by Annika Wills, but nothing confirmed yet. From BigFinish.com this week, Jago and Lightfoot Season 13 has been released. Very, very good. They always are great fun. And The Omega Factor Season 2, with Lou Jameson playing one of the main parts in that, meant to be very good. Well, Mike, so what did you think of the rather interesting way they ended the episode this week and your overall thoughts of it?
Well, great to see Lord Sutcliffe get his comeuppance. A thoroughly nasty character, perhaps lacking a bit of the, well, any sort of charisma really, just thoroughly nasty. You know, back in Classic Who, you might have had a slightly more charismatic villain, but the fact he was introduced as such an ignorant racist bigot was, made it out to me that he was needed to be set up for a major fall, and he certainly got that, Al. As I said, the CGI wasn't great in that part, but, you know, a decent enough action sequence to watch. Pretty much a decent enough resolution for me, I think, Al. What did you make of it?
Evil person. Maybe a bit not really stretched out as much as he could because of the time length and that. But I did think he had the right sort of comeuppance of the monster eating the person who'd been sort of chaining there for so many years. I agree it wasn't the sort of greatest villain, but I think we're sort of being gently spoon-fed better and better villains per week. I think next week's not going to get somebody very creepy. Played by David Suchet, apparently. I think the ending was good. I like you, thought the CGI wasn't the greatest in some bits, but overall I thought it had a good sort of conclusion.
Obviously the ending to the predicament they found themselves in earlier in the episode, but there was a bit more of a foreshadowing ending, Al. What did you make of Matt Lucas Nardole's appearance and a certain three knocks on the vault? What did you make of that?
That was a really interesting bit because, you know, you've got Nardole being funny towards the Doctor about him going off-world and then him being upset and you hear the vault and you hear the knocking and everybody's gone slightly mental about the knocking, saying if you listen to it carefully, it's the drums, so everybody reckons it's the Master in there. Now, it's probably a spoiler and also a sort of red herring, sort of typical Moffat red herring. But I thought it was very, very clever and I expect we're going to find out more about the vault the further we get into the series, really.
Yeah, you know, possible spoilers. We did see John Sim at the end of the new season trailer, at the end of episode 1. But I just wonder which Master, Al. It could be him, it could be Missy, couldn't it? That could be the big reveal, which one it is.
We don't know. I've got this feeling it's more John Sim because of the knocking, but, you know, there's so many different rumours. Is it the Master? Is it, you know, maybe the whole David Bradley as the first Doctor? We don't know. I don't think we're going to find out to at least halfway in, I think.
Lots of potential spoilers there. Not necessarily true, folks, but coming out of our mouths at the moment. Sorry about this.
Not mentioning spoilers, unfortunately, because there's so much. They've stuck this major big vault in front of us. It is a big spoiler in a way, because just out of interest, are the doors big enough for Cybermen? That's the other thing I've been thinking.
Could be anything, Al. Could be a Dalek. Could be another Genesis arc. Could be another TARDIS. Could be anything.
You know, because you look at the size of those doors, and they look like big enough for a sort of Simon to come out of them. That's why I look at them and think, is it that? Is it something completely left field? And we're just sort of, Dean Moffat's just taking us down garden paths with this whole knocking now.
Yeah, just rewind it a little bit. I want to talk about how impressed I am with Matt Lucas. You know, I thought after a while, certain people can be linked to certain characters for a lot of their careers, and obviously Little Britain was a huge part of his career. But he really has captured a great spirit in Nardole, I think. His comic timing has always been superb, and that really comes across, and I'm loving these little cameos of his, Al.
Oh, it's just really, really good, and I think they work so well, you know. Because I know a lot of people think if he was there for the whole time, it would just become annoying. But the way they've got him for, like, you know, 5-10 minutes in an episode, not even that probably, it's just his script, his pacing and timing is brilliant. The whole, you know, tea and coffee. I know it tastes disgusting, so I added coffee bits. It's brilliant.
It's just something about his voice, his delivery, isn't it? It just works.
It just works, and now, you know, he's sort of getting more like the that last bit at the end reminded me of the robot from Hitchhiker, you know, sort of groaning about, oh, I didn't have to be put back together.
Oh yes, Marvin the Paranoid Android. A definite hint to Douglas Adams, you know, throughout this setting. The whole idea of Sharda that he wrote first, which ultimately became the Dirk Gently novels, didn't it? The whole university setting.
See, that could be another thing too, because with the whole Sharda, there wasn't a mammoth planet inside a small thing, so that sort of could be another thing with the vault.
That could be very true. It could be taking it back a certain elements and reference to that story, Al. But shall we rewind, Al, and give our scores for Thin Ice by Sarah Donnard? What were your thoughts
score? We will do. I really loved it. I liked the episode a lot. I thought the whole Victorian scene was brilliant, and the whole sort of way it was filmed was lovely. Maybe I agree a tad bright in some bits, but otherwise I thought it looked really good. Good pacing. It had like maybe two monsters in a way. It had the monster under the, you know, the ice, and also a human society of monsters, really. So I really enjoyed. I thought Bill and the Doctor's relationship is growing, and it was brilliant. There was those really good scenes between them that worked so well. Sort of torn with my final score. I was thinking about it last night, and it comes very close to a 10, but I think I'm going to give it a 9.5.
Very good score, Al, and I'm going to be very similar to you, I think. Minor gripes, possibly a little bright at times, not the greatest CGI, but I don't always expect that of Doctor Who now. It's cult sci-fi that has passed on into the mainstream, certainly in the UK now. But the storytelling is so good. I love Sarah Dollard's script this week. I loved the Face the Raven episode she wrote previously. I certainly hope there has been talk of Chibnall having a whole new writing team, but I certainly hope she is one of the ones asked back. Great performances. As I said, sorry for the no pun intended again. Pearl Mackie taken to television like a fish to water or a fish to the Thames. Peter Capaldi so enigmatic, so masterful now, really. I'm in his role of the Doctor. Going to mention it every week, I think, this series. So sorry he's going, but I think he's certainly leaving the best till last. So I was going to go for 9, Al. Possibly knock off a few points for that. For the overuse of Murray Gore's music again, the bright palette, some of the CGI. But I'm going to match you. I'm going to say 9.5 as well. Best of the series so far, I think.
Oh, most definitely is the best one so far. But I have this really feeling we're going to get blown by Knock Knock next week. I think that is going to be very, very good.
Yeah, I was so enthused by that trailer as well, and Al. And of course, on the iPlayer, we are getting the special binaural version, folks, which is surround sound. So if you haven't got yourself a good set of ear-covering headphones, I'd get that and watch that on the computer when it's available after broadcast, and perhaps we'll all feel like we're in that house with the creaking floorboards, Al.
But most definitely. Apparently it's going to be on the iPlayer a minute the episode finishes, so about 8:10, I was saying, apparently.
Yeah, I'm so very excited for this episode now. Just hope nothing in this season lets me down, you know. I'm sure we will come to a point where I won't think an episode is so brilliant as the first three have been, really. But yeah, the trailer has given me hugely high hopes for next week.
I hate to say it, but unlike you, I think we, you know, it'd be brilliant if every episode was like now. Well, there has to be one, unfortunately.
Yes, and of course David Suchet fulfilling, as he said on the One Show in the UK a few weeks back, fulfilling a lifelong ambition to appear in Doctor Who. Really looking forward to what looks a very edgy and creepy villain, Al.
Oh, most definitely. But it's very interesting to see. His character's called the Caretaker. So what is he caretaker of the building, or is he related to the vault? That's what I've been wondering.
Could be both. Very interesting point, Al. It could very well be both.
Next time on The Target Files, we'll be discussing Doctor Who Season 10, Knock Knock by Mike Bartlett. And there's also a binaural 3D sound version on the iPlayer straight after the episode at 8:10.
Doctor Who Target Files, Season 10 Specials, Thin Ice Review,
featured Alexander Gibbons and Michael Winks. 12th Doctor theme, composed originally by Murray Gold. Version for the podcast by Vale Mystery, V-A-Y-L-E Mystery. Please check out their YouTube channel. Contact us at DW Target Files Twitter handle or search Facebook for the Doctor Who Target Files podcast. Doctor Who Target Files podcast Series 10 specials Thin Ice Review was recorded in Exeter, Devon, England and Swansea, South Wales during April 2017.